Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, March 3rd, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble contributor Doreen Nickel speaks to Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch, to talk about two important campaigns by Democracy Watch. The first, an honesty in politics law, which fines politicians who make false promises or misleading statements during elections and while in office. This campaign involves the proposal of an independent watchdog agency and gives the watchdog agency the power to investigate and penalize the politician caught lying. The second campaign is focused on ending secret, unethical lobbying. Because of loopholes in lobbying laws, it is legal for lobbyists to be secretly bankrolled by wealthy interests, to buy influence and trade favors with politicians and government officials in secret. Democracy Watch is a national nonprofit, nonpartisan organization and Canada's leading citizen group advocating democratic reform, government accountability, and corporate responsibility. Duff Conacher is an internationally recognized leader in the area of democratic reform and government accountability. He is the co-founder of the Quebec Public Interest Research Group and of Democracy Watch, which he has led since 1993. He is also a co-founder of Democracy Education Network, one of Canada's leading civics education organizations. Conacher also heads the firm goodorg.ca Consulting, which provides advisory services and training to citizen organizations in the area of good governance, ethics, responsibility, communications, and advocacy. Doreen Nickel is a social activist, freelance writer, and frequent contributor for rabble.ca. Here are Nickel and Conacher in conversation. Take a listen.
Welcome to Rabble Radio, Duff Conacher.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell Rabble listeners a little bit about Democracy Watch and what it actually does?
Since 1993, Democracy Watch has been trying to win changes to make Canada the world's leading democracy and also the world's leading jurisdiction for corporate responsibility, most especially bank accountability.
That's amazing. A lack of honesty is the number one reason Canadians don't vote. Democracy Watch would like to see an honesty in politics law at the provincial and federal levels. So basically, politicians caught lying would be fined 2 years' salary, as would the party they represent. How would this law improve voter confidence?
Well, right now, it's legal for politicians to bait voters with false promises during elections and then switch direction after they get voted in. And that's a fundamental violation of voter rights. Voters can inform themselves about party platforms, know them inside and out, backwards and forwards. But if part of those platforms that parties put out in elections are lies, false promises, then you can't actually be an informed voter. You can't cast your ballot as an informed voter because you don't know which of the promises are not true. And so you're kind of like you're playing poker and you know that there's some bluffs out there by some of the other players, the party leaders, but you don't know which one is bluffing. Your money is on the table because we're all required to pay taxes. And you're in a very bad position, like anyone playing poker is in when they don't know who exactly is bluffing and how much they're bluffing. And then in between elections, politicians and government officials can also lie without any accountability or without any penalty. And that is also a fundamental violation of voter rights. Why would people pay attention to politics when they know it's mostly full of spin and counterspin? I mean, that's like a soap operas, and soap operas have much more attractive people in them, and also they have much more interesting plots usually. And so it's not surprising to see more and more Canadians turn off politics and turn on to entertainment, because politics is not worth really paying attention to if you're being lied to constantly.
What's the significance of the 2-year salary penalty?
It's our proposal because we think to take it seriously, you're going to have a penalty that is that high. Otherwise, you'll see, the current violation penalty for violating the Conflict of Interest Act or the Access to Information Act or any of the spending rules in terms of wasting money in the spending rules in any government across Canada. The penalties are just a report saying that the rules were violated. And so everyone knows that. I'm going to keep my job. I'm not going to even pay any financial penalty. I won't even be suspended from my job temporarily. Won't lose any pay or perks or power. And I can just violate these rules with impunity. And so our proposal is, these are very, very significant rules. They are key to protecting our democracy. The Supreme Court of Canada has ruled that if these rules are not strictly and strongly enforced, we don't have a democracy. And so it's entirely appropriate to have a very high fine for a party leader who lies, and also fine the party, because the party is the one who elected the misleader. And we need leaders. We don't need misleaders. Misleaders don't help us at all solve any problem in society. They just cover up problems and delay any problem being solved.
What would happen with that money? I'm sure listeners want to know, where would this money go?
Well, the money could go to a citizen watchdog group over government ethics spending and honesty being part of ethics. We have another proposal for forming and funding such a group. It should be implemented by every municipal government to have a group watching over that at the municipal level, every provincial government and territorial government, and every federal government. It's a very simple method. Right now, governments mail out or email citizens at the municipal, provincial, and federal level regularly about paying taxes. Tax forms are filed electronically, a lot of cases now, social welfare programs, all sorts of notices that go out to individuals, because the governments have the email addresses or the addresses of everyone. And so what we're proposing is the governments would set up, through passing a law, a nonprofit citizen group that would watch over government ethics and spending and honesty. And whenever they send out an email to citizens or something in the mail, at the email at the top would be a one line that would say, join the citizen watchdog group. And in the mailings, there would be a little pamphlet that would say, join the citizen watchdog group. Go to this website, click here, and join. And then everyone across Canada, all voters, would get an opportunity that would be really easy to join together into a group, one to watch over the federal government, one in each province to watch over the provincial government, and in your municipality. And, at the federal level, there's 27 million voters. And if just, 5% joined, you would have a group with 1.25 million, one and a quarter million members. And if they're each giving $20 or $30 as a membership fee, you'd have a group with a $25 to $35 million annual budget. And the money, these penalty monies could also go to that group, to strengthen the resources they have to counter the unethical behavior of politicians, government officials, lobbyists, and also dishonest and wasteful actions and decisions. It would cost the government across Canada, governments, nothing to set this up. They just pass the law and then start including the one line at the top of emails and the pamphlet in mailings that they send out to voters. Voters would fund it. No one would be forced to join. The groups would have a democratically elected board from amongst the members. And then we would have groups that are strong enough to stop this rampant, dishonest, and unethical behavior of politicians and their lobbyist friends.
Let's take a look at a couple of examples specifically in Ontario. So the Ford government promised that it was not privatizing healthcare while stealthily doing just that. And the Ford government also promised not to touch the Greenbelt and then backtracked on that decision and is currently carving up the Greenbelt. What would the honesty and politics law do in cases like these?
So Democracy Watch proposes that the integrity commissioners across the country be changed into actually fully independent integrity or ethics commissions made up of three people, at least. Right now, all the integrity ethics commissioners and also all the other watchdogs over transparency and ethics and waste prevention. They're all chosen by the ruling party cabinet in almost every jurisdiction, except BC, where they're chosen by all the parties. But, you know, politicians don't really have an incentive to choose strong watchdogs over these areas. And so they often choose lapdogs. And we need a fully independent process for choosing the people who enforce these rules. And it shouldn't just be in the hands of one commissioner. It should be a multi-person commission. So that there's a bit of check even within the enforcement to ensure one person can't just be a lapdog all the time. And so what would happen is someone would file a complaint with the commission. Commission would investigate, determine whether it was a false claim. And if it was, they'd have the power to issue the fine. And the politician, if it was a party leader, cabinet minister, they'd pay a two-year salary, an individual politician the same, government official the same. And if it was a party leader, then their party would also pay the same amount.
That's a really great idea. In February, just changing the topic a little bit, you addressed the House of Ethics Committee to oppose key changes to the Code of Conduct for lobbyists. Democracy Watch believes that these changes will gut the ethical lobbying rules. Over 1.5 million members from 27 citizens groups oppose these changes, as do David Suzuki, Alan Broadbent, plus 18 additional citizens organizations who want to stop these changes. Can you explain the problems with these changes and what should be put in place instead?
Yes, incredibly, the Commissioner of Lobbying, her name's Nancy Boulanger. She was handpicked by the Trudeau cabinet back in late 2017 through a secretive, dishonest process where the Liberals actually misled the opposition party, said they didn't have any qualified candidates except for her, when in fact they had five or six others. And they did the same with the ethics commissioner, Mario Dion, who's just resigned. Also dishonest, secretive process where the cabinet controlled choosing their own watchdogs. And this watchdog, Commissioner of Lobbying Nancy Boulanger, who supposedly are the public's watchdog to ensure ethical and transparent lobbying, is proposing to change the lobbyist code of conduct to allow for rampant unethical lobbying. Right now, if a lobbyist campaigned in a significant way for a candidate or a party during an election, or assisted them with other favors, fundraising, event organizing, distributing materials of the party in between elections, and did that at a significant level, then they're not allowed to lobby the politicians, the party that they helped, for 4 years. The commissioner is proposing to reduce that to zero. And what that means is that lobbyists will be able to fundraise an unlimited amount of money and campaign for and do other favors for cabinet ministers, party leaders, and other MPs at the same time as they lobby them. It's completely gutting the rules entirely and allowing lobbying at the same time as fundraising and giving other assistance to politicians.
So there was some input from labor and unions and some issues around certain parts like hospitality and lobbying. Can you explain that to listeners?
Sure. Unfortunately, it seems like the big unions are misunderstanding the rule. The rule does require you to sit out for 1 year if you are doing political activities like campaigning or fundraising nearly full-time or full-time, or with frequent and extensive interaction with a candidate or a politician or party official. So nearly full-time, that would be like 30 hours or more a week. And they seem to misunderstand it because they think that's going to prohibit people from doing low-level volunteering and canvassing and campaigning activities for candidates during elections. But it won't. You'll be able to do up to 29.9 hours of that kind of campaigning. And that's a lot of campaigning. As long as you don't have frequent, extensive interaction with the candidate, which you wouldn't if you're doing just low-level political activity, campaigning and canvassing, things like that. And so they're opposing even a one-year cooling-off period for people who are doing up to 30 hours of campaigning a week, an unlimited amount of raising an unlimited amount of money. I'm not sure why they're opposing it. This is not a bar. This 1 year prohibition on lobbying would not apply to anyone doing low level canvassing or campaigning. In fact, it's going to allow lobbyists to do up to 30 hours of campaigning and fundraising at the same time as lobbying cabinet ministers and other politicians and party leaders. In terms of the gift and hospitality rule, the commissioner is proposing a limit, which makes sense. So $40 limit on any gift or hospitality and an $80 annual limit per MP. And that makes sense because if you look at the political donation patterns in Canada, over the past 5 years from 2016 to 2021, the average donation is $75 annually. And that's the best indication we have of how much Canadians can actually afford to donate. So an average Canadian can afford to donate $75. And so we shouldn't allow lobbyists in Ottawa to be whining and dining politicians for hundreds of dollars a year, each politician being able to be taken out multiple times by lobbyists. It's fine to hold a couple of receptions where MPs come and they learn something about the issue, a buffet or coffee meetings with them. And you can do that for, you could do four coffee meetings. It only costs about $10 a person to have a coffee meeting with a bunch of MPs. And you can do a couple of receptions. And that's all that should be allowed. As well, MPs have an expense account for hospitality. And they also are paid within the top 5% of salaries in Canada each year. So they can pay, if lobbyists want to hold more events and invite MPs to them, then MPs can pay for the costs. They can pay for their own meals. We just can't have it left open to allow lobbyists to be whining and dining politicians who they're lobbying, because they're doing favors for them at the same time as asking for favors. Just like if you're doing fundraising or campaigning for them, shouldn't be allowed to do that at a high level and without having to be prohibited from lobbying them afterwards, because you've done a favor and they would feel obligated to return the favor.
And when will this final decision come down? And is there any action or actions that Rebel listeners could take to help, further Democracy Watch's stand on this?
Yeah, and it's not just Democracy Watch. As you mentioned, there's more than 25 other groups that are opposing these changes that will allow for rampant unethical lobbying and corrupt favor trading between lobbyists and politicians. And the House Ethics Committee is currently reviewing the Commissioner of Lobbying's proposals. And they'll be sending a letter back to her saying what they think about them. I think they're going to call for more consultation before she finalizes anything. And if people go on Democracy Watch's website, they will see a campaign to stop secret unethical lobbying. And by just clicking send on that letter on democracywatch.ca, it'll be sent to all the party leaders and the House Ethics Committee members and the commissioner herself, calling on her to not gut these rules. These are very real important rules that stop unethical lobbying, and gutting them is a very bad idea. It's going to lead to a lot of bad decisions that negatively affect the 27 million voters in Canada and the other 8 million people who are under the age of 18 in Canada. So it's a very bad idea, and hopefully we can stop it.
In the last few minutes that we have, what one other campaign would you like to highlight?
Well, I think the other big one is our open government campaign. Secrecy is a recipe for corruption, waste, and abuse of the public and the public interest. And that includes not protecting whistleblowers in government and big businesses who blow the whistle on wrongdoing, which is part of having an open government and an open business, is allowing for transparency through whistleblowing. And the Federal Access to Information Act is being reviewed by the same committee right now, the House Ethics Committee. And the Whistleblower Protection Law is going to be reviewed very soon by another House committee, the Government Operations Committee. And there have been committee reports from both these committees to strengthen both the Federal Transparency Law and the Whistleblower Protection Law in the past. And the Liberals have ignored them since they were elected in 2015. And, of course, secret lobbying is tied in with that, another form of excessive secrecy. And so the federal government's reviewing all these key laws right now. Some of the provinces are as well. The same problems exist with excessive secrecy, dishonesty, and unethical lobbying across Canada in every jurisdiction, municipal, federal, provincial, territorial, and federal. And people can join in at democracywatch.ca. And if you click send on any of our campaigns, you'll be sending a letter calling for key changes to federal leaders, your provincial premier, your provincial and federal politicians, and key other government officials at the federal and provincial and territorial level. And hope everyone will join in, and hopefully we can get some of these key changes, especially at the federal level where all these key laws are being reviewed over the next year or two.
Thanks very much for explaining this to us, Duff.
Thank you very much for your interest.
That was Rabble contributor Dory Nickel and Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch, in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Duff and Doreen. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, we'll hand it over to Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in Canadian politics, national politics reporter Stephen Wentzel reports on a new convention signed by Canada that will enshrine the right to a violence-free workplace. Wentzel reports that Canada ratifying the International Labour Organization's Convention 190 to eliminate harassment and violence in the workplace marks a major step forward for the rights of workers. Canada is the 25th country to ratify the Violence and Harassment Convention of 2019. The internationally agreed definition of violence and harassment in the world of work relates to unacceptable behaviors and practices that aim at, result in, or are likely to result in physical, psychological, or sexual, or economic harm. Not only does the convention recognize that violence and harassment in the world of work can constitute a human rights violation or abuse, it also calls it a threat to equal opportunities, incompatible with decent work, and goes against the need for mutual respect and dignity in the workplace. The convention will require Canada to adopt an inclusive, integrated, and gender-responsive approach to preventing and eliminating violence and harassment. In other national politics news, Justice Minister David Lametti has introduced Bill C-40 to the House of Commons, also known as David and Joyce Milgaard's Law. At the age of 17, David Milgaard was wrongfully convicted for a murder he did not commit and spent 23 years in prison. His mother, Joyce, campaigned tirelessly to prove her son's innocence. Bill C-40 will shift the responsibility for judicial reviews from the Office of the Minister of Justice to an independent commission. The commission will comprise of 5 to 9 members. At least 1/3 of the commission, including the chief commissioner, but not more than half, must be lawyers with at least 10 years of experience practicing criminal law. Commissioners can serve up to 7-year terms, which would be both staggered and renewable. The bill has passed its first reading in the House of Commons and will move on to second reading. Also this week, on the Courage My Friends podcast series, host Resh Badu is joined by poet and scholar George Eliot Clark for a very special 2-part season finale. In part 1 of this episode, Badu and Clark take us on a journey through Black and Afro-Canadian history in Canada. Clark discusses his life and work and the importance of recuperating Black and colonized histories through writing and resistance. In part 2 of their conversation, Clark reflects on past and current struggles against white Western supremacy, the meaning of decolonization, and shaping effective resistance in Canada and beyond. Catch up on this week's episodes of the Courage My Friends podcast and previous episodes of this series on our sister podcast show, Needs No Introduction. Courage My Friends is a partnership between the Tommy Douglas Institute at George Brown College and with the support of the Douglas Coldwell Layton Foundation. In labor news this week, Gabriela Kiluge-Kasuga reports, nurses in Ontario are fighting Doug Ford for better wages and staffing. On Thursday, February 23rd, the Ontario Nurses Association, or ONA, hosted 40 all-out pickets to fight for a good deal for nurses who are feeling disrespected, according to ONA Interim President Bernie Robinson. Robinson highlighted that this is the first time that nurses will be freely negotiating after 3 years of wage suppression under Bill 124. She said this collective agreement is crucial to helping nurses catch up with inflation, which would help recruitment and retention of nurses and improve patient care. Doug Ford introduced Bill 124 in 2019. The bill capped potential annual wage increases for public sector workers at 1%. In November of last year, the Ontario Superior Court ruled that Bill 124 is unconstitutional. Now, public sector unions are not limited in the wage demands they can bring to the table during negotiations. Amidst a healthcare staffing crisis and hospital wait times reaching record highs in the fall, Ona says that investing in public health care will help make these crises subside. Negotiations between the union and their employer continue this week, and Ona organized a second day of action on Thursday, March 2nd. In other labor news, the Union of National Defense Employees, or the UNDE, are continuing their fight for fair wages, good working conditions, and inclusive workplaces. The workers being represented by UNDE are non-public funds employees, workers who are engaged in supporting those serving in Canada's armed forces by providing food, health and fitness, and recreational services, and more. Most of our members are working for non-public funds, earn less than fast food chain employees, UNDE National President June Winger said in a statement. The statement continued, quote, "That makes it really difficult to recruit and retain workers, and has direct impact on services provided to our military personnel and their families. This is totally unacceptable," end quote. UNDE is waiting for a public interest commission to review their negotiations with their employer. But the process is slow, and Winger explained that the results of the commission's report are non-binding and therefore have limited effect. Winger explained, quote, "Essentially, it's a speed bump in the process. That's too bad because it could be so much more," end quote. Finally, join Rabble for a very special book launch webinar on Thursday, March 30th, 2023 at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Through the experiences of the contributing authors, Advocating for Palestine in Canada offers an indispensable and first-hand view into the complex social and historical forces at work in one of the world's most urgent issues, and one which also has a huge implication for freedoms enjoyed by Canadians. This webinar will feature contributing authors from the book to share their unique views and wide experiences on advocating for Palestine in Canada. Save your spot for this free online event with the link in our show notes, or for all of you listening on radio, find the link to this event on Rabble.ca. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.